This is You and the Law on AM 650. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. Sterling Fox with the guys from Hobbs Girodi in studio, David Hobbs and Ian Girodi. By the way, a terrific website, gentlemen, an outstanding website. Let me give the address. It's HobbsGirodi.com. And let me spell it for you. It's HobbsGirodi. HobbsGirodi.com. A terrific website. Lots of good information there. You gentlemen are barristers. Now, the logo says barristers and solicitors, but barristers are the guys who go to court. You two spend most of your working days in court. What is the most common reason that people come to you and want you to go to court on their behalf? What has happened in their lives vis-a-vis a will that they need a litigator in their corner?
Well, it's interesting, Sterling, that when people come to see us, they're usually angry, they're upset, they want help. And I think people tend to think of court as being the place you get help. But I think we now know nowadays that if you end up in trial, you got to have somebody who's experienced to run that trial for you. And, mm-hmm. and we have that experience. Probably one of the things that's our strengths is we've done a lot of trial work and a lot of court appeal work. But, you know, like any well-managed project, I think you don't want to end up in the courtroom unless you should be there and you have to. And I think we pride ourselves on making sure the work's done to make sure that if we end up there, that's the place we're supposed to be in. And if we can get the matter resolved some other way, then we do that.
Right. Now, Ian, you've mentioned that just before, during the break, actually, that it's not always all about court. You advocate on behalf of your clients, but frequently a settlement, an out-of-court settlement, is reached.
Right. Far more often than not, actually, Sterling.
Okay.
The reality is even though we're barristers in the sense that we do civil dispute fights, in effect, the fact is that most of our days are spent in the office, working on our files, meeting our clients, meeting potential new clients, and working towards trying to resolve disputes short of going to trial, either through an informal settlement process or through mediation.
I have a friend, I've mentioned this to you before we started the show, a guy in Toronto, a wills and estates lawyer named Les Kotzer, who years ago wrote a book called The Family Feud, and Family Fight, rather, and Planning to Avoid It. His whole premise, and he's a great storyteller, but his whole premise was, if only people took the time in the drafting and preparation of their wills, paid a lot more attention to detail, a lot of the fights that evolve out of a will would be avoided. Is this a finding that you would agree with as the guys who resolve or help win those fights that end up, I would think, in some cases at least, David, because of a lack of proper preparation in the first place?
Yeah, I agree with that, Sterling. I think that if you want to avoid problems, you can't avoid all problems through good estate planning. There may be other reasons why problems arise, but that element of the potential for problem, you got a good lawyer, a good advisor, the two of you communicate well, they know how to draft a will properly. I mean, sometimes we have disputes over the interpretation of a will. The words that have been used in the will are subject to more than one interpretation. So we have to go to court to have an argument about what the proper interpretation of the will is. And so that would be avoided, that type of problem, by working with someone who's experienced drafting and making sure that stuff doesn't happen.
Just leave out the ambiguous references and be very specific, right, Ian?
Right, and also, you know, if you're not going to treat your children equally under your will, you know, perhaps a written explanation that is either attached to the will or is with your lawyer or the person who took your will.
No, I'm thinking
might
of the,
help.
I'm thinking of the Smothers Brothers. Mom always liked you better. I mean, is it that simple in some cases where a parent does, through their estate and their will, clearly favor one child over another, and the unfavored child would react negatively and seek you out to try and balance the deal?
It's a very, very common fact pattern.
Oh, okay.
Sure. And, you know, not surprisingly, all things being equal, you would think that a parent would treat all of his or her children equally.
You would think,
yes. In their estate planning. But there may be a very good reason why they don't. It could be because one of the children received substantial gifts during the lifetime of the will maker, or received a substantial loan that they neglected to repay. It could be for bad reasons too, however, and that's where the Wills Variation Act and estate litigators can be of assistance.
Now, wills variation, there's an interesting legal term, David Hobbs. Help us understand what a wills variation is.
Well, Sterling, BC is a bit unusual in that we have a piece of legislation called the Wills Variation Act. It's a pretty simple statute, but it has pretty profound implications. What it does is it allows a spouse, and then definition of spouse is broad, could be your legal spouse, your common law spouse, or your children. And that means your biological children or adopted children.
Okay.
Could be your long lost estranged child. Those people can apply to court to have the court change the will, change the distribution of the will. So if I left everything to one son and nothing to the other,
right,
that missing son could apply to court and say, no, that will should be 50-50, or I should get everything. And I want the court to rewrite that will. And that's wills variation.
And does the court oblige, provided there's a reasonable explanation, can the court sort of insert itself into the mind of the will maker and say, no, that's probably not what you were thinking originally. Let's split the pot 50-50 between the two kids.
Oh, definitely. Like the Supreme Court of Canada wrote an important case a few years ago, and I'll oversimplify it, but the will maker left a lot of his estate to his children, not much to his wife, didn't leave her the house. And so, you know, the court rewrote the will and said, no, that house belongs to your spouse. You've been married to her for 40 years. You can't not leave the house to her and leave it to your children. The court and the law applies a moral and a legal standard to spouses and a moral standard to children. So you have to meet this society's expectation.
So again, at the front end of the process, then, Ian, if you want to deliberately favor one child over another, then you better be prepared to back that favoritism up in writing, or you're not likely to have it recognized in law. Correct?
Writing is very helpful in defeating a variation claim, so long as the explanation set out in the writing is valid and rational.
Okay.
So if it's, I am disowning my son, Bill, because I don't approve of his lifestyle. An examination of that lifestyle might lead one to think, well, you know, we moved past that several decades ago.
Right, right.
And that's just not a good reason for treating that child less favorably than your other children under the will.
And I suppose it sounds like, and it's kind of odd of me to think this way, but it sounds like in some extreme cases, a parent is sort of seeking almost a bit of revenge in death that perhaps they couldn't articulate in life. Is that weird of me to say, David, or have you encountered situations where the courts have felt the same way?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, exploring family history and psychology and emotions and trying to understand why people think what they think at a moment like that can be quite a complex exercise.
Mm.
But I think Ian's point is that you can't disinherit your children for reasons that society generally would not approve of, because what's being applied is a societal objective standard. If you've been giving a lot of money to your son or daughter their whole lives and maybe not making the same loans or gifts, if you will, to the other children, and you declare that this is a reason why you've divided the pie differently at
right,
the end,
right.
Perfectly rational, valid
right.
explanation.
But there's never any difficulty figuring out who the aggrieved parties are, is there, Ian? Because if you've been left out of the mix for whatever reason, and feel that, wait a second, something is really wrong here, I'm going to go see Hobbs Girodi and find out where I stand and get my due. That person is generally more than a little worked up, aren't they?
Yes, it's a very emotional area of the law.
I'm sure.
It's akin to family law, quite
frankly. And thus my friend's book, The Family Fight.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, Sterling, one of the things that surprised me over the years is the number of children that were adopted and then separated from their parents. You know, you have young marriages. Many years ago, they adopt a child, mm-hmm. and then they have a divorce. But that adopted child remains the child by way of adoption.
Of both parents, right?
Of both parents.
Correct,
and,
yeah.
And years later, a person dies, and up pops a child that maybe the children of the next marriage don't even know exists,
sure.
or know about.
Right.
And we see a lot of those unusual situations.
And I guess the work for both of you, who seem to be extremely level-headed, capable individuals, must be... difficult at times because of the extreme emotional nature. Someone has died. There are parties who are still grieving in most cases. And then there's this whole sorting out of that other person's life, and maybe we're a part of it or not. And then I'm not. Wait a second. And then the emotions are, it must be just an unbelievably inflammatory atmosphere at times.
Well, I think Ian may answer this differently, but what I do is I try to acknowledge people's emotions. I mean, emotions are real, and you have to acknowledge them and
right.
accept them. And I try not to wear them, because I'd be worn out if I was wearing everyone's emotions all day long. But I acknowledge them. They do exist, and they are part of the puzzle in terms of solving things. They have to be recognized and dealt with. Beyond the emotions, then you're looking for a fair way of resolving a problem so people can move on with their lives and not spend their whole lives caught up in a particular dispute that they're having.
But Ian, some of these emotions run pretty deep.
Well, they do, and I actually agree with David. It's very important to recognize the emotions. On the other hand, our job is to gently nudge them while recognizing the emotions.
Sure, sure.
Gently nudge them in the direction of what we think would happen on the law. Should they advance a claim or defend a claim.
Okay. And when people who feel that they've been... First of all, how does one find out? We hear about the reading of the will that follows someone's death. Who does the reading? Where does that happen? And how do people find out? Do you get invited to a reading of the will? And only if you're in it? Is that how that works?
Well, you find out about the will in the process of probate, because the executor has to begin a process to have the will probated. And in doing that, they have to contact the people who have an interest in the will and give them notice that they're intending to apply for probate. In a normal situation, normally the will would be shared with the people who are interested in the estate. Technically, the executor doesn't have to do that other than to the extent of the gift to that person.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to show them the whole will, but they would show them the part of the will that demonstrates their gift. But in a simple situation, the will would be exchanged amongst the parties and so on. But we do run into situations where there are fights because people will not bring the will in. They won't. I'll give you an example. A beneficiary may be living in the house of the deceased, and maybe the house is to be sold. And
okay.
Maybe they just like to keep living there.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want the will probated, because that's going to cause them to move.
That's
so,
right, yeah.
So their siblings may like them to get on with selling the house, but they don't. And that becomes a dispute. And we get called into those types of situations.
Ah, and how would that one get resolved, Ian, given that one child, presumably a grown adult, nonetheless, lives in the
right.
old family home, and all the other kids have moved out and moved on.
Right. So
so now we want to sell the house because, it's Vancouver and it's worth a few bucks, and we'd appreciate the dough, mm-hmm. but somebody doesn't want to leave the old family home. How
right.
do you work that one out?
Right. So usually that scenario has the person who's in the family home. They may well have sort of been the one looking after
mm-hmm.
old Pa and Mom
sure.
over the years.
Yep, you bet.
And they're probably the named executor under the will, right? Because that's the person who has to bring the will before the court in a probate application to prove it, to prove that this is the last will. They don't do that because they want to keep living in the house. The way the other people interested in the will can address that problem is that they can issue that person a document that requires them to bring the will to court. And if they refuse to do so, then someone else can go and say and essentially say to the court, let me be the executor of this will, because the named executor under the will isn't doing his or her job.
Oh, okay. And now let's talk about executors for a second. And again, Well, let me take a break first, because executors is an important aspect to the preparation of wills, and again, perhaps to organize the whole package for not only the family and the immediate group, but in many cases there are charitable beneficiaries and a whole secondary level of recipients as well. So the executor is the center of all of that activity. So when we come back after the break, we'll continue with David Hobbs and Ian Girodi and You and the Law, and we'll talk about the executor component right after this.
There's more of the show still ahead. This is You and the Law on AM 650.